Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Well, welcome to the OC, bitches.
Oh, hello, bitches. It's so good to see you.
Today we're doing season 2, episode 8, The Power of Love.
Yeah. It's so, so much fun to be here in our studio at the Cohen House, because also our guest really needs no introduction, because you know him, you love him. He's agreed once again to give us his time to chat about The Power of Love. And his album, 7 Days in Memphis, that was inspired by this ep, none other than Sandy Cohen, a.k.a. Peter Gallagher.
Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Hi, Peter.
How are you guys? Talk about the power of love. I love you both so much. It's so good to see you.
And we're just so happy that you're here in person with us, not quarantined in Canada while we talk to you.
I know that. I was so impressed we pulled that off, that the Wi-Fi stayed and we got it all together and...
Well, I think we've gotten a little better at this medium of podcasting. And
I haven't.
It's so much fun to see you. You're the first. Well, we had Michael Cassidy, actually. And you're the first, second actor to be in our studio. And so thank you so much for making the long trek out to Van Nuys.
It was so easy. I'm honored.
I think the last time I saw you in person, Peter, I feel like we ran into each other at the
airport. And I remember seeing you in New York, which I have to give you some pictures because they're really cool.
Oh, right. That was actually, I was there doing Gotham. And Peter, you were, of course, I don't know, you were there working, or Catherine, your daughter, Gallagher, that we've had on. She was doing her Broadway debut, 2015.
Oh, 2015, that would have been Spring Awakening at the Brooks Atkinson Theater.
Oh my gosh. Okay. On the subject of Catherine Gallagher, who is my idol, who I look up to, who we had on the show. So just brilliant and effervescent. And how were the Tonys?
Yeah.
I just want to ask.
The Tonys were awesome.
Yeah.
The Tonys, by definition, are painful. Because if you're going to the Tonys, you either have been nominated and chances are you won't win, or you haven't been nominated and you have to perform, or, you know, all the months leading up to the Tonys, if you're in a Broadway show, it's exhausting. So there's a certain amount of excitement and a certain amount of dread. And this is the best Tony Awards I've ever been to, because I had nothing to do with any of them. And I was just my daughter's date. It was really cool, because we saw it was at a time, you know, it was such a vulnerable time in Broadway's history with the pandemic and the question whether things were going to succeed or not succeed. And Catherine was nominated for a Tony Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Musical for Jagged Little Pill. And she won a Grammy Award for the same show, for Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill, which they just closed, unfortunately. I'm not that broken heart about it because she was getting raped 8 times a week. So as her dad, it was really
a little rough.
I knew that the psychological kind of wear and tear is substantial, especially if you're doing it in a show that's like that. So it was a great, great, great show, and I'm so glad she did it. But I'm glad she's not doing that anymore. But we had a blast. She looked beautiful, and she asked me to go. So I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
To be your daughter's date.
Yeah.
Nominated for a Tony.
I know. I had 2 jobs going on at that time. And for each one in the contract, it was like, I have to be here for this time.
As long as you let them know beforehand, sometimes they can accommodate, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. Well, speaking of Broadway, just the fact that I want to get right into, of course, one of the reasons that you came back for this is your singing voice and your performance and the fact that you, on our show, but you started in Broadway. And I just wanted to say that this morning as I was getting ready, I put on Spotify and I put on 7 Days in Memphis. And it gives you this, you know, shuffle of all Peter Gallagher stuff. And I'm listening to 7 Days in Memphis and it bounces back to Guys and Dolls. And I'm in the bathroom doing some hair. And all of a sudden I hear a song and I'm like, what's that from? And sure enough, I look and it's Idolmaker. And I was like, it was all Peter Gallagher this morning. And it's such a lovely, lovely album. And I just wanted to talk about the fact that I know, just in my bit of research, I know that Josh had been looking for a way to incorporate your singing into this episode. Did you know how that was going to come about? Did you have any input or how you were going to sing in this episode? Or did you just read it in the script?
I don't think I just read it in the script. I think Josh spoke to me about wanting me to sing a song and he wanted it to be an 80s song, which immediately filled me full of dread. Because the only 80s musicians I could think of off the top of my head that I really would want to cover would be Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know any, and none of those songs were quite right. And I was thinking, and of course I went to my wife, who knows more about music than any human being alive, as far as I'm concerned. I would never sing a song in a show if I was doing my own show that she hadn't approved, or, you know, she's just really good at that. And so that was a challenge, trying to think of an 80s song. And then Josh just turned it around and said, how about Don't Give Up On Me? And I almost started to cry. Because I had forgotten, when I first heard Solomon Burke sing that song in the first season, I listened to it a million times. Because I thought, man, if I could ever be lucky enough to sing that song someday. Because I just love the song. It's just Dan Penn and Bucky Lindsey wrote it. You know, Do Right Woman, The Dark End of the Street. One of the great, great, great songwriters of that era. And it was performed by the great, great, great Solomon Burke. And so it was like a gift. It just made me feel so... It's like one of those few times, not that few, but every once in a while, you know, if you're in showbiz, you get to do stuff that you just can't believe you get to do, You know? And not that I felt unqualified, I mean, it was a little, but it's just, you don't expect those opportunities. If you haven't been getting them all along, you think, oh my gosh. And then we went back and forth with a couple of, you know, those 80s English bands that I didn't vibe with too much. And then, because I was just not my era. And then he came up with that song and it was awesome.
Right, it was probably a throwback to Sandy and Kirsten and the mail truck and in college.
Right, oh, right, in the 80s, right.
The 80s, yeah, why he wanted 80s.
Because I was in college in the 70s.
Right,
it was
right. Much
better music.
Right. Yeah, but that's the first time so I know the song was on the show before, but I remember you singing Don't Give Up On Me, and that was my first knowledge of this song, and I fell in love with it. But because of how you sang it so beautifully and what an incredible song it is, and it just brought me to tears like every time I would hear it. And of course, sure enough, when I watched this episode, I was bawling.
She's a crier.
I'm a crier.
Well, you know, the episode is moving and funny. And meanwhile, you guys are... Mindy, you are so... Whoa, you are like so tough on the show. And beautiful. And Rachel, you are so effing funny. Now, the cashmere thing just had me right. Well, my wife and I are both going laughing.
Well, you know, the synopsis, just so we can kind of, you know, whatever. Yeah, what we're talking about. This episode is when Sandy seemingly forgot his and Kirsten's 20th anniversary. He tries everything to make it up to her, but with Seth acting out to try and be with Alex and Ryan lying on his behalf, Kirsten fears leaving the boys alone and their anniversary may be doomed. DJ calls it off with Marissa after seeing her true motivations for dating him. This was directed by Michael Lang, written by John Stevens. It originally aired on January 13th.
Oh my gosh.
Today is January 13th. But that was 2005.
That's so crazy.
But how crazy is that?
We're on it. This happened last month too. So I think we're going to continue. It's very, very cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. And of course, Peter sings in this episode and it just brings the house down.
Yes. Well, so let's get into the episode and then we can talk about a little bit more as we can incorporate. I want to hear more about the album.
Have you ever forgotten an anniversary in your real life, Peter? with Paula?
No. no, I did. You know, once though, the one time that I sent, wasn't an anniversary, it was Valentine's Day, another.
Yeah.
The horrible holiday. I was out of town and I planned several days in advance to send Paula a beautiful bouquet of flowers. And I arrived on Valentine's Day and I, hey, so did you get anything? No, you didn't. So you didn't get anything? No. Why'd you send? Yeah, I sent flowers. I said, uh-huh. And so you, and so the next day the flowers come and they changed my note and said, sorry, they're late.
They changed it.
They changed the note. So I didn't I did not have a leg to stand on. And I mean, she believed me because she believed me. But you know, it was very hard watching the episode.
What?
It was hard watching Sandy lie.
Aww.
And I kept thinking, boy, if I didn't have that song, I'd lobby for another way. I'd lobby you know, either admitting that he forgot or say, what's so big about it? What's, right. What's the big deal about a 20th anniversary? What makes that better than 19 or right. 21? Sandy, it's important. And why? Important for what? You know, rather than lying. So that was tough. But you know, the writers, I'm not a writer and I didn't create this show and make it successful. So that was the only thing. Oh, Sandy, don't lie. You don't have to lie. Come on, just, there's another way.
But it was such a great opening scene with the fact that, you know, you're standing there doing your tie and we hear the song in the background. Mm-hmm. And I was like, first I was like, what is Kirsten doing that makes your eyes go, whoa? Your reaction like something's happening off screen. Or, whoa. Like she's like goosed him or something. But it was like, even I was like, what? And the math, you're like thinking really quick and like, oh, no, I'm just teasing with you. But it is something that Sandy, being a public defender, will defend, or argue like why he doesn't like Valentine's Day or come on, I'm just joking with you. And maybe I can get out of this and you know, put a little spin of humor on it. But Kirsten's just not quite having it. She's not totally being punitive. She's not really being a jerk about it, but she's not happy, right?
No.
So, but right before that, before we get go too much further, that the fact that Seth calls Ryan and says, oh, lie for me,
right.
Because she's spending the night with Alex.
That's what the whole thing is.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. He does that, and it's and then you have that the anniversary situation, and then Ryan does the worst job lying.
Oh my God.
And you guys are so good at just detecting his bullshit detector or his bullshit.
Well, Sandy's not a very good liar either.
Right. But yeah, but you're like, you can tell he's lying immediately, especially with Ryan's specific answer on Seth's report. What was it? Like 20th century
agriculture in California.
And even Kirsten's like, that's very specific. And yeah. Because they know their son.
Right.
They know. Yeah. They're definitely. But
Sneaking around. Did you ever catch your kids sneaking around? Did they lie to you ever?
Jamie or Catherine ever do anything like that?
You know, we had a little around video games there in high school. My son, I remember thinking, I'm going to get out on the roof and look in his window and see if he switches that screen. And then I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't want him to think I think he's alone. You know, it's so... We were very lucky. I mean, we were pretty honest about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's big, I think, in being a parent.
I'd rather them know me as, you know, a loser than a liar.
I like that mentality.
But when we go to school,
yes.
Of course, Seth is like, novice move, Ryan. You don't give them specifics. You're like, a report, maybe, I don't know, science. You got to be like...
That was a good Ben. That was good.
No.
Yeah, he did a terrible job. And then we're with Summer and Zach and...
Poor Summer. She
Ryan
walks into
Seth.
This. Yeah.
She does. She, you know, Seth obviously
that was pretty
slept
funny,
in
that
his girlfriend's.
Whole thing.
Yeah. Summer is not okay with it.
Well, you guys have some good one, you know, these one-liners where they're kind of the Bickersons, I've called them now. And he just walks right into it. And he's like, what? You're shacking up with? Oh, yeah. But for a teenager to see the guy that you really secretly still do love, we mm-hmm. know that. Mm-hmm. And to hear that he might be having sex. We don't know if he is or not. And yeah, I don't think he is with her.
Well, didn't he?
He spent the night, but it's very ambiguous because he tells Sandy later on that it's not like that. And I feel like they tell each other the truth. Because remember, he was so excited to tell Sandy that he was doing it with Summer. So did he or not? Well, we'll find out.
I don't know. I feel like they are. Oh. I feel like, well, because then later Summer is like, I was supposed to have sex for, oh, maybe they didn't. I don't know.
Doesn't look matter. At her. Doesn't look at, matter look because at she Alex. Thinks about it.
Also, that would really piss me off.
Meanwhile, see, like Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, I'm going to say, that's his girlfriend. Of Hello? Course I freak out. I'm like, can I sleep with her? Yeah, so she's obviously very perturbed.
25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions to the modern woman in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. And after 10 years of navigating dating, friendships, career shifts, heartbreak, and of course, love in New York as Carrie did, I couldn't help but wonder, how relevant is Carrie's column 25 years later? Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we commiserate on first dates, one-night stands, love lost, friendship breakups, and everything in between. To bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City through a modern lens in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
We also have the Riviera Magazine going on.
This is a big thing in Orange County. Riviera Magazine, I think they would regularly put like very wealthy, you know,
right.
media or real estate moguls on the cover. And Julie, I mean, it's interesting because Caleb's now just gotten out of jail and he was in the newspaper, but now Julie behind the scenes must have spun her magic and got them on the cover of the magazine. And it's just, anyway, so we haven't gotten to the actual shoot of the magazine, but I love the fact that Marissa's just like, I need money. Classic teenager, mm-hmm. classic teenager. And I love Alan Dale's delivery of like, oh, good God, just give me the money.
Yeah.
Shut up.
How good is Alan Dale?
Oh my gosh. He's great in this episode. He's just like, he just does everything straight and it's hilarious.
Yeah, everything is straight.
Well, you know, it's amazing to have a story about teenagers. Mm. There's a great book about teenagers called Yes, Your Teen is Crazy by Dr. Michael Bradley. Uh-huh. And it basically establishes that for teenagers, they really have no notion of consequence. And so it's a great idea to have a show about teenagers and parents because parents are essentially powerless. Mm. And teenagers can in one moment blow up the world, the next moment melt your heart, and the third moment blow your mind because they are just chock full of hormones and possibility and laments and rage and big feelings. And so it's, you know, it's interesting that we endow it with this rich people's world and the outsiders coming in like Ben and even Sandy, but it's essentially a story everybody identifies can understand. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, rich people are even more screwed up than we are, yeah. And their kids are worse than ours, or they're just like ours, or you don't have to be. You have no money to have crazy kids, even rich, you know. So there's a kind of a validity to exploring those stories mm-hmm. about lying, about sex, about parents. And it just seems to have such endless supply of fuel for the stories because they're so entertaining. I find myself laughing.
You know, this episode in particular, I think was so highly satisfying because this is one of Sandy's best episodes. And I think it's one of your, I think other than the pilot, it's the most screen time that Sandy has.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it really works. And when you see, And it didn't feel like, you know, because they were probably always trying to find that balance with the kids and the parent storylines. Right. Josh has always said that Trojan horse, you know, we know that there was a lot of that going on. And, but the storylines, the kids' storylines affecting their relationship is so real. How many times have you, as a couple, my husband and I have been like, we would like to enjoy this, but the teenager is going through this and we're disagreeing about it and it's creating conflict with us. That is so universal. I mean, so going into that next, going into that, into the kitchen when Sandy's, then Sandy's making a big deal on the montage about, oh yes, I've got a reservation at the montage. And you're making
Alan Firstman montage. Yay.
Alan Firstman, the owner of the montage. We all became friends. You're very good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we love
I was obsessed with that hotel. But, so it's, Kirsten's just being like, you know, she's got that. She's quietly just going, the montage is doing this. She's just not. And you're still playing. And Sandy keeps doing it. He's like, don't worry about it, hon. And so in that respect, when you were rewatching it, you're like, why is he lying?
No, I mean, it wasn't that serious. I just thought it was, you know, for me, a lot of watching these, I haven't either watched them ever or watched them in a long time. So it's,
But was it fun? Did you enjoy watching it? It's really fun to rewatch it, isn't it?
Well, also, I just love the cast. And with the talented bunch and a fun bunch, the cast, the synergy or the chemistry of the cast was a whole component in and of itself, I think.
We talked about that with Brody because he was kind of like, you know, you think, it's like this magic in a bottle kind of thing that doesn't always come along. As you know, Peter, I mean, how many times, you know, you've done these things.
I spent a lot of time telling Brody and Ben. that doesn't happen every day, you know.
But it's true. It's so true. I mean, I've never had anything since that's been quite like it and how special it was. And so that there's a lot of truth to that.
You also have the luxury of doing a show 9-10 months out of a year. And for some people, that could get monotonous, but I used to go to work, so excited to go to work. But when we look at these episodes and these scenes of the Coen family around the Coen kitchen, there you guys just have it's like your chemistry, and it gets better and better as the series goes on. And it's just like, and you can see everybody either experimenting or taking chances or taking risks or doing something they hadn't ever done, which is the luxury you have in television.
And even, you know, and Josh could have put the kibosh on ad-libs or, you know, improvisations or, you know, been very rigid about.
Some shows are like that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and he was, you know, he was mature beyond his years at that time and courageous enough not to feel that his story was being, you know.
Yeah. Brody had a lot of improv. Yeah,
I mean, we all did. We all, you know.
We did. It was nice to have that freedom.
Yes,
for sure.
And you know, and you think, oh God, this not going to win. And you know, just, oh, that stayed in.
What I wanted to point out is, you know, that scene in the kitchen where you're talking about the montage and everything. My favorite is when Seth knows it's your 20th anniversary.
You haven't seen him today. You're going to ground them. Get in here.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what today is? Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it's your 20th anniversary.
Your reaction. It's classic because I don't think Sandy wants to be that guy. It's an interesting thing to look at the dynamic of Kirsten and Sandy as disciplinarians, because I just think Sandy is one of those guys that's flexible. You've got to be flexible in parenting and really look at each situation to decide what's the best solution to a situation, whereas Kirsten's like a little bit more, come on, let's rule. You're not ruling with an iron fist. It's just not one way or one way. And so when you call him in to say, you know, I'm going to lay down the hammer, and there is something to be said for Seth going, my parents love me so much that whatever punishment I get, I still know I'm loved. And I think there's a lot of kids that are scared of their parents' discipline and punishment. So they'll do everything they can to get out of it and lie and all that. Seth's trying to do everything. And in some ways, as a parent, it's like, I know that my kids got to go out and fuck up and do things. It's fine. They have to do that to learn. But Seth kind of takes it to, in this episode specifically, he's really pushing the boundaries. But so you have to, like you find, or Sandy says, you have to be a bad guy to be a good dad.
Yeah, I mean, there's elements of that. Also, I mean, Sandy has just cranked everything up to about 11 because he's standing on such thin ice.
Because you know, I'm doing it to make my wife happy.
Don't protest too much. Why? Well, you know, you should be. Yeah. You know.
Because you're guilty.
So
too.
I'm totally, because I screwed up. You know, right. So we're all just dancing as fast as we can.
Yeah.
In trying not to disappoint.
Well, and then when he says, we're trying to go away this weekend,
uh-huh.
and you know, and we need to be able to, so you're going to stay with Julie and Caleb, and they are like, oh, no. Yeah. And you're like, and you say, what did you say? Nothing like Julie Cooper to strike fear in the hearts of children everywhere.
Oh, no, I laughed at that. That was great. And they really worked. They were like, oh, no, fuck
and
no.
Then I was like, well, okay, so picture them over at Caleb's big mansion. What would they be doing? Julie's like putting spells on them or something. I don't know.
Sneaking out, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, we skipped a scene, which we have to talk about very quickly because Lindsay, you know, Lindsay and Ryan are kind of getting hot and heavy. But at school, she is wearing the sexiest looking bra.
That's what Paula said last night. Wow, is that what they were wearing in high school? I don't think so.
It was a big departure from what we've seen Lindsay in.
Shannon, right?
Shannon Lucio.
Yeah. Who's wonderful. But we had not seen that. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, hello, boobs. Like, it was very, very risque for Lindsay.
I mean,
Lindsay.
I guess this is a teen, you know, it's like, I'm feeling. She was like the hormones
stepping it
raging.
Up or something.
Yeah, she's with the khaki pants. So she's wearing khakis with lingerie.
There's some expression there, like rock and roll up top, and I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, party on top downstairs. Or whatever. Yeah.
It's like whatever they said about mullets.
Yeah. Right, party
business
in the back.
Up front.
Party in the back, yeah. It's true. And her like pink eye or purple, whatever, it matched her top, her eyeshadow.
No, she's just got that.
Yeah. She's ready.
Cat and heat.
Coming for him. And we've just obviously learned that they're basically related to some extent. So this gets interesting.
I think it would have been weird if they found out before, but I guess I've kept thinking, like, is it really that weird? You know, the whole...
I mean, look, they're not actually...
Yeah.
Yeah, how are they related?
They're not.
It's Caleb's daughter.
Right.
So it's a half-sister to Kirsten. So they're not blood related.
Right, okay,
no,
good. Okay,
but
right.
If you've adopted him as your son and whatever.
Yeah. The whole thing is just a little... It is a little bit awkward, but...
Super
awkward. And I can understand that.
Super awkward. Yeah, so Summer and Marissa are in Summer's room studying and Summer's super upset that Seth has had sex before her. She decides that her and Zach are ready.
Right. Doing French. I do think it's funny that you guys are... It is a classic thing in Southern California to... most kids learn Spanish.
Right.
And it's beneficial. And like CG, my daughter... I told her to take Spanish and she decided to take Mandarin because I said no.
So
and then she took French and then finally she got to college. She's like, Mom, why didn't I listen to you? And I said, because you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And because you don't want to do what
learned.
I tell you to do.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Lindsay comes over to study with Ryan. That happens. Okay. Here, Kirsten and Sandy are eating ice cream, right? And you are wondering if grounding them was the right thing to do. So you decide to invite the boys down.
Because Bill O'Reilly is on TV and that
like,
would
that's
be punishment.
Punishment enough.
I'm like, why is the channel on Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah.
Kirsten's watching it.
Because it's a Fox show.
Well, Kirsten is, well.
Oh, okay. Kirsten probably is watching it.
Right.
Right? So you want to go get Seth to come down and you find some Seth.
Oh,
trying
right.
to sneak out of his room.
Like, really? Oh my God, I laughed out loud so hard at that. It was like, you're like, with your look on your face like you're hurt. Sandy's like, really?
Yeah, it's really funny. And then so Kirsten goes to get Ryan and she catches Ryan and Lindsay hot and heavy.
Journey's on. Does Ryan actually put Journey
they
on?
Always, Journey is very tied to Ben and I have a feeling because Ben loved Journey.
Well, they're great.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. But he's got his shirt off. Like, it's like, it's about to happen. And Kirsten walks in. It's definitely super.
And she's got the same top on.
Right. It was that top that made it. Yeah. But now Kirsten, she's really down. And she's like, I we can't leave. Here are the consequences of the relationship. And sorry, Sandy. And Sandy's still convinced that they can go. And they try to apologize with pancakes,
right,
which seems to be the, and I just love Adam's, his choices here where he's like, Dad, you're not going to believe it, but what? You're doing pull-ups? And he's like, yeah, he's good. He's good. You tap in here. And then of course, Ben, Ryan's just like, we lied. We're sorry. And it won't happen again.
Right.
But they keep lying.
They do keep lying. Julie tries to have a heart-to-heart with Marissa to bribe her to come to the photo shoot.
I mean, we just saw her. You know, Jimmy just left and she was all sad and everything. And,
right.
and she had that whole drunken thing. And it's kind of just, Julie just goes, when she doesn't know what to do, she just goes back to the Wicked Witch of the West Coast. She just goes back to, you know, she, for some reason, you know, first I was like, in the last episode, I was like, Julie's almost racist. And it's not that. It's just that she doesn't want her daughter to make mistakes she did.
Right.
She came from the wrong side of the track. She's just, I don't know why she's so against DJ at all.
I don't know. I think a couple of more years of high income and fancy living, she's on her way to being a Karen.
Oh,
Julie.
Well, what the hell are you doing in my yard?
She basically does that.
I could see that.
Yeah, no, she definitely. But then we find out she gets humbled next season. Well, if you don't remember that one.
I want to get to this bait shop scene because it's one of my favorites from this episode.
Is one of the best scenes in the episode.
Where Sandy goes to talk to Alex. You know, because Seth's been sneaking around with her, you know. And you're asking Alex to straighten Seth out. In order to be a good dad, you've got to be a bad guy. So, yeah, this is embarrassing for Seth, sure. Like the dad going to talk to the hot girlfriend, whatever. But I loved this with you and Olivia because she's realizing what it's like to have parents that actually love you.
I know,
and care.
It was touching, actually.
It was.
She was very good in that scene.
Very good. I loved this scene.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country, and even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
We got to know a lot more about Alex. We haven't had that much development. And we haven't seen a parent in the bait shop before. And this is where Sandy is different from other parents. And it's like, I'm going to go out and solve a problem, but I'm going to do it you're doing it out of love. You know, you're not doing it out of anger or fear,
or
threatening. You're doing it out of, I need help. And you're talking to young people almost as a peer, giving them respect.
Yeah.
Gets you so much leverage.
Absolutely.
It just gets you a lot better solution, I think.
Yeah, I like when you're like, I'm not the cops. It's much worse. Seth's dead.
right.
Yeah, but it's true. And it does work. Okay, so Summer next tells Zach she wants to take it to the next step. She's, of course, talking about sex. He thinks she means meeting the family. So now Summer has to go meet Zach's family.
That was very funny.
What was that line about where he says, I have to pick up my sister at the airport. And Summer goes, why is she handicapped? Which is not a good word to use anymore. We acknowledge that. I don't understand that.
I don't either. But my delivery of it, like I played it like genuinely like, oh, is she handicapped or something?
You don't pick up people at the airport? I don't know.
I didn't get it either.
I guess it's over my head.
She needed help? Well, they're getting picked up. I don't know. It was a very odd
maybe,
line.
Maybe she can't get home on her own.
I don't know. It was. I don't know.
But it's all right. There are little mysteries still out there. We don't have to solve them all.
No, the mystery will reveal itself.
The next scene, we find out that your talk with Alex worked because Seth goes to see her and she's like, no, buddy, we got to take a step back.
Yeah. And he instantly is like, did my dad come by the club? And you know, we keep tagging Seth as so selfish. He is, but it's more self-involved than it is, you know, your parents are worried about you. This is the first, I feel compelled to listen to your parents. That's the power of Sandy Cohen.
Absolutely.
And he understands, but he's still like, you know? And anyway, he just has to accept it. I guess Alex could have said, let's just tap the brakes until your parents' anniversary is over. But I think there's also that thing about, you know, she does kind of live wild, we're finding out. For 17, she's definitely not living the same.
No.
And Seth's world is expanding so fast. You know, before Ryan got there, it was like, it was all in his head.
Yeah. Video games and
it's still all in his head.
Yes, but it's not all in his head. He spent the night with Olivia Wilde and
he's riding high.
Fist fight and almost got into one. And he's participating in the world in a way he hadn't before.
And
he's
that's a smart kid.
Well, it just, you know, it opens up windows and doors and connections in your, he's a bright kid, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fun to see him, you know, try to manage all the world is offering him in this moment and that he succeeds in leading with his heart.
Right.
And his, which is what happens when that's how he has been treated in his life.
I'm so glad you're here because, it was hard for, you know, when we watch these shows, we're like, Seth, why are you doing that? Well, you just described it perfectly. He's experiencing something.
His life is
exploding.
A teenager
and it's fun.
Oh my gosh. It's like, this is better than, what is the like, this is as good as a video game.
Right, right. not better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But then that takes us to one of the best scenes of the episode because you and Kelly together are so dynamic and, you know, she's sitting there by the pool and she's
pissed.
Simmering. She's screaming inside, whatever's going on. And she's so convinced, she's still convinced that she can't leave the boys alone. And she says, I have to tell Ryan that he can't see. She wants to tell Ryan that he can't see
Lindsay.
Right.
And I keep trying to put myself in her position for that. Like, it's just weird. If somebody all of a sudden just is your blood relative and then you're dating your son, it is weird.
Oh, yeah.
I think it is understandably weird. And she's angry. And all of a sudden, this big argument, and she brings up Portland. Which is still not fair, but it's showing that she's showing some resentments.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys go at it. And I should find it cute that you forgot our anniversary. Like, that's like don't get in an argument with Kelly. That's Kelly right there. she's a strong woman. But, and that, you know, I can't.
And wonderful in the show.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
In this episode, the scene where you actually were calling them in and grounding them, there was a look on Kelly's face that I hadn't seen in the show before. And it was like intense. Like Kelly's got some deep, multi-layered stuff going on as an actress. And it's just, it's a joy to watch her work. She's definitely got that going on. But that was a great argument. And one of the things that I love about Sandy and Kirsten is that they get in these intense arguments, but they recover quickly. That conflict resolution is important, as I say. And it's healthy. Right?
Talking is important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You have to. I keep saying absolutely. Sorry.
That's all right. Absolutely works.
You know. But yeah, communication is the key to
understanding.
Yes. It was a successful
relationship. Actually an AT&T ad. I remember back in the 60s. My mother was very big on communication. And I remember said, communication is the beginning of understanding.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, that takes us into the next scene. One of my other favorite scenes, right?
Sandy and Seth communicate.
Communicating. Oh, come on. Come over. Let's do this. Sit down.
All right.
I mean, like if my, I think my dad used to do that from time to time, but it didn't feel safe. But your the conversations with Sandy and Seth, they just feel safe, you know? They just feel, there's so many kids out there that were watching this going, I wish my dad were like that.
Yeah.
No, it's very touching, you know? Because yeah. I still hear from people like that. And you understand the extent to which, you know, being a father is hard and being fathered can be very hard. And, you know, as I've said, in my own experience, I love my dad, but he never talked to me, you know, so we would work together, you know, clean the gutters or fix stuff or, you know, try to learn plumbing. But I'd ask him about the war, I'd ask him about anything, you know, he'd never expressed any real interest in what I did and then I heard from a cousin, who was a Treasury agent, my cousin John. And when I was on the road and playing Red Bank in the bus and trucker Greece, he said, yeah, you know, your dad called me up and said that you were going to be in town. I'd forgotten all about it. So I went to the box office and they didn't have any seats, but he ended up sitting with follow spot operator.
Oh, to come see you on which show?
In Greece. In a bus and truck at Red Bank, New Jersey, wow. Which is an old theater. And you could actually see through the holes in the stage to the basement below. But anyway, so I was very touched to find out that my dad even knew where I was playing or what I'd be doing. And so you never know about anything.
That's true. Right.
But communication's a good thing. I think I had that kind of communication with my mother a lot of them.
And Sandy does that. He says, did we do anything? And he says, no. And then Seth says, very honestly, I just feel like I need to prove my worthiness to be around her. And then Sandy says, at the expense of your parents' relationship. Like, what you're doing has some consequences. And I think it finally lands on him. It's taken this whole episode for that. It
takes a lot for anything to land on Seth.
I think that was putting a lot on Seth but
I thought it was a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, it was a little guilt. But, you know, it was a little... And here's a little extra dose of guilt just to think trying it again. Right.
Well,
but then
Jewish guilt.
Yeah, but then Ryan says, how can we help? And we don't know exactly what that means yet, but.
The whole Kirsten and Lindsay thing going on.
This is harsh.
It was really harsh.
Really harsh.
I like felt it. I did too.
I thought, how you're going to cut your sister loose? And what?
She's a
mother.
You're going
to take this other guy in? What?
I know. It's actually like, it was very hard for me to watch because she is a mother. And from that standpoint and that perspective, talking to a 16-year-old and basically being like, no, like, let's take a step back, you know? And I really felt that. I felt really bad.
Just remember this moment when you're in therapy in 5 years, okay? You'll save a lot of time. Okay, get out of here.
Right, yeah, exactly. I'm setting you up for that.
I could see Kirsten's, it's just like she's so confused. There's so many things going on that we're not seeing. But and even at the end when she kind of puts her head down and... She's trying to work it out and she doesn't have the answer. And you hear something else that I remember, and I don't know if it was a scene or not. I don't know if you noticed Kelly's voice was really deep. She lost her voice once, and I think it may have been this. It may have been this scene or another one. She had no voice when she was talking like this and she had to ADR, but I think she may have had a cold. But she's like, when she said that line, adopting Ryan was a really big deal. It was this deep way, and I was like,
I don't have another one in me.
Right. But it is when you think about that, just all of a sudden you have a blood relative. And so Kirsten usually does, I think, what society would expect her to do. Mm. I need to be gracious. I need to do this. But inside, she might be screaming. She's still screaming. She's still pissed off at her dad. She's got a lot going on. So... I mean, I can understand it from that point of view, but it was hard.
It was. It really was.
Yeah.
Next, we see Summer with Zach's mom and sister for dinner.
Because dads love me. Oh, dad's not going to be here.
Oh, fuck. Well,
I love that scene.
I think I feel that way myself personally. Like, I do much better, I think, with men than women. And I'm more intimidated if it's, you know what I mean? And so I could relate to Summer here. She's like, oh, shit. And she makes a very funny mistake when his sister brings up cashmere.
Oh my God, I love the cashmere.
Oh my God, I like pashmina.
Cashmere?
Oh, pashmina. That was the has big
that
thing
ever, has that ever happened to you? I was talking to somebody, a very, 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 like literally a rocket scientist. He was talking about being in India for a wedding. And I was like, did you experience Bollywood at all? Meaning like, did you watch any movies? And he went, no, India, not Bali. And I went, oh. And I was like,
awkward.
But it was just somebody who doesn't
watch TV or movies.
TV or movies.
I guess not.
So, but it was like that feeling. That, so I could totally.
Yeah. Well, poor Summer. But this
she dove in with both feet. Summer did.
Oh, yes.
Finally, something we can talk about.
Oh my God. It was so embarrassing.
It was pretty funny.
I felt for her. But Zach seemed really like, he seemed okay.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't as, I'm sure, but of course, we always think things are a bigger deal in our own minds than God. They really are.
Our mind is our enemy. But then we go to the bait shop and Seth asks Alex for his job back. Alex shares that he doesn't realize how lucky he is to have a good dad.
Yeah, she really wants to hammer it into him.
Yeah, well, Sandy, you really did.
And so does he, really.
Yeah.
Power.
Okay, did well there.
The photo shoot.
Oh my God.
We talked about this with Michael Lang. So in the script, and I wish I could find a photo. So in the script, it says the photo shoot. Julie is wearing a turban. Like think Joan Crawford.
Oh, I remember reading those stage graphics. Right.
So think Joan Crawford in a turban with like a big diamond.
Oh my God.
So they had one in the makeup trailer, right? And we put it on. I've got this big five head, not a forehead, a big five head. It just looked ridiculous. and they're like, I said, you know what? Put it on. I'm walking to set to show for, let's put it on for rehearsal because we were up there at the big house. And I said, I had the PA, it was probably Sean, the PA.
Yeah.
I'm like, tell them it doesn't work. And it was like, okay, I'm going to show you. And I walk on set. Michael's like, oh, I'm sure it looks fine. And I walk on set and he was like, yeah, no. I can't explain why it just didn't work, but it didn't work. So
that's actually really funny. Yeah,
I know.
I would have liked to have seen that.
But yeah, no. But okay, so Alan Dale is hysterical when DJ shows up and he's like, what's the yard guy doing here?
He's like, what, is he here to mow the lawn?
Yeah. Tell him to check for poison oak. It's just like, I'll take care of it.
Yeah, so Marissa obviously pulled a number here.
She's really, you know, yeah. Oh, and then of course, Julie going, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And you think maybe Julie's going to do something nice, and she just comes out with a shot.
Not a shot.
That was classic, like Dynasty.
Oh God!
I mean, I played it that way on purpose. It was written that way. I played it that way.
Oh yeah, and you did fantastic.
It was
offered
fun.
Him $5,000 to never see her again.
And DJ came back to see Marissa and gave him.
Yeah, he is a good guy.
He was absolutely a good man.
He is, but he should have taken the money after what Marissa put him through.
No, he's honorable.
It was honorable. You walk away with your Chanel wallet. Very clear, that logo. So Ryan next tells Lindsay that their relationship is causing problems with Kirsten and Sandy and that they should be friends. So Lindsay just gets dumped by Kirsten.
Really? She gets the short end of the stick.
She really does. And now she gets dumped.
I felt bad for her.
I felt bad for her too.
You know, the chances. And she said, yeah. And I was a choice. Do I go out? I could go out with you or live with my sister.
And
guess what?
Yeah.
But do you see Ryan's side of it?
Oh,
He absolutely is like, they've done so much for me because the last conversation we saw was, hey, Sandy said, I thought you guys were going into the friend zone. You lied to us. I'm sorry. I mean, right now, Sandy, whether it's right or wrong, he's like, you guys are affecting my relationship. Mm-hmm. Kirsten has been punishing you.
Right.
For whatever's going on. You're not quite sure whatever is going on.
Yeah. So Sandy then tells Kirsten that he's going to take her to the Arches for dinner. It's their anniversary after all.
With the big babysitters.
And then two big old police officers show up as the babysitters. For a second, I was like, is this like a revisit to Julie's bachelorette party? What's happening here? and then you guys are at the Arches and Kirsten apologizes for bringing up Portland. She's afraid of losing Seth.
Yeah, that's really when you think when something's going on, it's like, what's really going on?
Mm-hmm.
And she really is feeling that, like, that loss of her son, that, you
know, she's spiraling a bit.
Yeah. She's a lot going on. And I've got this new sister and my dad and what I, without, we try not to talk too much about spoilers, but there's a lot coming up with, with Kirsten and Sandy. And, you know, we got to pay attention to a lot of these things going on underneath the surface, because the stuff doesn't come out of, and you know, it doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. Stuff's been going on. Right. So, but, and they're at the Arches, which is the famous restaurant in Newport that's been there for years. But, you know, now we found out McG owns it and it's called A Restaurant.
Oh, wow.
They didn't get the Arches name, but it's called A Restaurant. So he bought it. Yeah. That's a cool thing.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm going to have to go there once.
Yeah. So you guys are having dinner and the cops show up. The boys are gone.
Dun, what? Dun, dun.
And then you have to ride in the cop car to get there.
Yeah.
Of course. Which is great. So
put the pedal to the metal, fellas.
But before we get to the bait shop.
Before we get to the bait shop, what am I doing? Oh, Summer is in her room. Now she has become, you know, she's trying to catch up on the news. She's like, if only it could
I remember that, yes.
Put it on pause so I can catch up. And she's like, it's constantly changing.
But this is the beginning. You know, you did it with Passover. She had to educate herself on Passover.
Right.
Now she's going to educate herself on
the
world affairs. And it's the beginning of her awareness. And also, she's made the assumption that Zach is going to break up with her the same way you broke up with Seth after the disastrous lunch with your dad.
You're right.
And you're making assumptions. Don't make assumptions.
Make assumptions.
It's okay. It's going to be okay.
It is. But it's really funny, all of her new educational materials.
Yeah. Kofi Annan works for the United Airlines.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think he works for United Airlines or something. It's pretty good.
See, Summer's world is expanding too.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, it's parallels. I like that. So Sandy and Kirsten are in the back of the cop car, and he says he knows where the boys are.
How do you know where the boys are?
Just give me a minute. They arrive at the bait shop.
And surprise!
Sandy has planned a surprise anniversary party.
And Ryan and Seth, they're so good on stage.
They've been
on stage for all their lives.
Really sweet. And they give a heartwarming speech. But after that, you know, Sandy gets ready to get on stage.
Oh, I think this is so funny. Kirsten's like, no. And I had to write, I'm like, is this a good gift? Have you ever sung for Paula like this? Like, everyone gets a song dedicated to them at some point. Would this be a good gift? It would be, right?
To sing
to serenade your wife?
Like, don't give up on me. This is like, you know.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. It's because of what the song expresses.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, it's an apology.
Right.
The other thing I noticed, it was called Sandy Cohen in the News. And all of a sudden I went, like Huey Lewis in the News and the power of love of the name of the episode.
Right.
Because I always like to know where the name of the episode comes from.
It was such a grand gesture, even though Kirsten the whole time is like, oh God, like, don't tell him, like, you know.
Your husband's a rock star, Alex says. Don't tell him that.
That was good, that. Otherwise, it would have been too much. If it was like, oh, wow, maybe he could start recording now. Like, more realistic. Oh, don't get him. Don't encourage him.
But it was endearing. And then she's also really genuinely enjoying it and touched. But then they have, the endearing thing of like, please don't tell him how good he is.
But, you know, because it's television, we have to have scenes over your song.
Right.
And I just kept going, come back to Peter.
I know, me too. I felt the same. I was like, come on, I'm really enjoying this.
But, you know, we do find that Zach isn't breaking up with Summer. He's like, I like you because you're not like the rest of my family. There's so many different ways to be smart.
Yeah.
Which is super endearing and a great thing for a guy to say.
What a good thing to say.
Right?
Yeah, really sweet. And then you tell Marissa what you did. You offered DJ 5K.
As a test. Which I don't know about
that.
I don't know about that either.
That was a little reverse engineering.
Yeah,
For sure.
Yeah, it was a test and he failed.
Yeah, it was a test.
And then I like this moment with Kirsten and Ryan. She apologizes for freaking out and he tells her that they should be friends. And then she says that they should dance.
She's not saying, I give you my blessing, go get married. No. She's saying, why don't you ask her to dance?
Yeah. But it was sweet. It was a gesture for sure.
He's dancing a lot. Ryan's dancing this season.
Out of character, but yes.
Yeah.
Kirsten thanks Alex for the party. Here we see that she's getting the example that she can be accepted by parents, which I really think is sweet because Seth is like, no, like they're cool, you know? Yeah. And I like that a lot.
I like bringing her in.
Yeah.
Right.
I do too. Marissa stands on the pier. DJ shows up. He breaks up with her.
It's a lovely scene though. Mm. Because what's interesting is DJ says, look, some of what your mom said was right. You did like me, but I don't think you liked me as much as you hate her. So let's, you know, I don't know. It was a writer's way to end the character, mm-hmm. I guess, because I don't think we see DJ again.
Oh, we don't?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, he ended on like very, yeah. you know, yeah, admirable,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
integrity. It was,
yeah. And, you know, it's what we find that Marissa has very mature moments and very hurt child, inner child moments. Like last episode, she had some very important adult things to say to Jimmy. And now, you know, teenagers can be very, very wise for their years. So they ended it, you know, nicely.
They did. And so this, obviously we touched on this, Peter, you know, you singing in this episode and then you getting to create an album that came from you singing on this episode.
So yeah, the episode aired and how did the album happen?
Yes.
Well, first of all, the version of the song, the way the song, you know, evolved is they introduced me to a producer they were thinking about. And well, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's long hair. And you know, he's an alternative student. I don't know. I said, great, let me meet him. And it was Bob Thiel Jr. He and I are still great friends. Our kids are great. Owen Thiel, his son, and our daughter, Catherine, work together. It's very talented. And Bob put together the most amazing band. Let me tell you who's playing on that track. Davey Farragher on bass, Ben Montench on piano, who is one of the original Heartbreakers with Tom Petty, and Dean Parks on guitar, who has played guitar for everybody in the world, and Joey Warnker, an amazing drummer. And have I forgotten anybody? I don't think we had any horns. And Bob produced the session. And I was so excited. As I said, it was such a thrill. And I hadn't been singing a lot lately, so I spent a lot of time trying to get back into shape vocally. And I was like excited and nervous. And I was driving down to the studio to record. And this car pulls up and this beautiful woman is next to me. And she rolls down and says, hey, I just want to tell you, I'm a lesbian, but I think you're awesome. And I said, thank you so much. And it was really like, thank you. It gave me just to like, all right, I'm not crazy. It just like was a little pat on the back.
Gave you that boost.
And then being in the studio with those guys
yeah.
was amazing, you know? And so that, and I was very nervous because I was covering Solomon Burke. Solomon Burke is the king of rock and soul. And, you know, he'd been performing, you know, since the late 50s, one of the greatest singers, greatest, you know, soul singers. And he had won a Grammy for that song and for that album. And here's this little, you know, white kid from the suburbs singing this. And I really wanted to honor the song. And after this, the next day, on the 14th of January, 2004, I guess, I got a message from production saying to call Solomon Burke at this number.
What?
I was so nervous. I could just imagine what he was going to say, what I did to his song. I mean, I don't know if it was Bucky Lindsey and Dan Penn wrote the song, but as Solomon said to me once, write a word, get a third. So he might probably had, maybe he did have a credit on that. I don't know. But so I called the number. I said, and somebody answers, hello.
Hello. this is Peter Gallagher. May I please speak to Solomon Burke?
There's a pause. And he said, Peter Gallagher, you, sir, have soul.
Oh,
I just died. I started to cry. And I said, thank you. Thank you. And we talked and we had a lovely conversation and we exchanged numbers and stuff. And I mean, we really connected. We talked for quite a while and and connected in a lot of ways. And it was kind of lovely. And he called me, exchanged numbers and stuff. And he called me about a week later. And he said, listen, how would you like to come play with me on down in Dana Point at the Blues Festival? And sing with the band. We can do that number. I said, oh my God, Solomon, I'd be over the moon. So I had the nerve, because he sings it about a half pitch higher than I do. And I didn't even think. I said, do you think maybe you guys could do it half a step lower? Well, we'll see. I forget his keyboard player, but the keyboard player wanted to kill me. But we did. But he had we had some of the rhythm section from, I mean, the horn section from Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I just ran into the drummer, Hazi, the drummer from that session in town. He said, man, we didn't know what to expect. But he said very nice things to me. But so Solomon and I got a chance to, I'll show you pictures of somebody was there taking pictures to perform together. And it just cemented our friendship. And I gave him a Celtic cross from Ireland. He was very religious. He has 22 kids and a funeral homes and a limo business. He had, he's no longer with us. I went to his funeral, of course. And we just stayed in touch. And I sent him this thing. And then when he went to play the Vatican, he had the Pope say a mass for us.
Aww.
And then this crazy thing happened where after the show came out, I got two record deal offers, one from Epic and one from Warner's. I thought, okay, the record business is in trouble if they are offering my 50-year-old ass a deal, and I'm taking it. Because how often in my life is this going to ever happen? Ever? No. And so I went with Steve Barnett at Epic Records, and he stayed in his position long enough for us to get the film, the picture, not the picture, the record finished. And his idea was to do an album of all soul songs from the Stax era. And Steve Cropper, the great guitar player, blues, the Blues Brothers, he co-wrote and played on Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. He was one of the essential kind of players in the Stax era. And so to make a long story short, they put together an unbelievable band. And I felt like a fraud trying to do a whole soul album. So I said, how about we do a couple of numbers from songs from the Stax era, but we interpret other numbers in that, you know, that wonderful Memphis sound. And so I sang three songs by Isaac Hayes and David Porter, the great writers. But I still felt like a bit of a fraud. And I went down to Memphis and I called up Solomon, and he's also a preacher. I said, Solomon, I need your blessing. I'm going in here to record, and it's such an opportunity. It's such a beautiful thing, and I just don't really want to. I just want to be able to give it my best, but I do, because this is your world, and I just need your blessing to know that, you know, Peter. And he just, you know, he was amazing. He talked to me for quite a while in the parking lot, and then I went in and did the record in 7 days, and had to cover a few things because my pipes were just completely shot by that. But you know, it was just you know, as these things we do in show business, when you have opportunities like this and your paths cross with people that they might not have crossed with otherwise, it just, you know, enriches your life. And certainly singing that song and knowing Solomon, getting to know Solomon and his kids, and unfortunately having to say goodbye to him, you know, it's just one of those things I'll never forget. And I'm proud of the record, you know, and I'm proud of it. And the producer was thinking, I think he probably wished he was producing for anybody but me. But after I started singing, he says, well, at least you don't sound like you're from Broadway.
Yeah, but I noticed it entered Billboard's top Heat Seekers chart at number 6.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No, you're
right.
I had no idea. Yeah. I just thought it was a total bomb.
No.
I mean, Steve and I toured. We, you know, we did talk shows and performed. And then I took the, I sang this, I did my own show and toured that with Bob. Bob was in the band. We had a great band.
You also did a friends. You also did a video and Kelly was in it.
Yeah, she agreed to be. It was great.
Really?
We came up. Yeah, because we she was terrific. We shot it at the was it the Georgian on Ocean Ave in Santa Monica?
Sure.
Yeah, that's it's so cool. Sweet of her to do that, to jump in. Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners, you guys can check it out. I think I watched it on YouTube.
You did?
Yeah.
What a fantastic story.
I know.
What a,
thank you. I mean,
what an amazing thing.
It was.
So we have voicemails for you, Peter, from some
three,
fans.
Two?
Really?
Yeah. Two. Is that a three?
Oh, yeah.
Three.
Hi, Melinda. Hi, Rachel. I just wanted to say thanks for this awesome podcast. I'm addicted. I love listening to it. I have watched The OC twice now, and my husband and I rewatched it with our 18-year-old daughter this past year, and we're actually watching the last episode in the hotel in Nashville minutes before we had to move her into Vanderbilt because she had to finish it and see what happened. And so it was a really fun family thing. So thanks for that. And it's been wonderful listening to the podcast. And my question is for Peter, we all loved you as the OC dad. And I'd love to know, what was one of your favorite parenting in character moments on the OC? And what was one of your favorite Seth moments too?
Well, my favorite, one of my favorite moments with Seth, I would have to be the facts of life.
Yeah.
I just felt so lucky to be saying those words to him and for him to be saying those words to me. What's interesting about the parenting thing is Josh wrote a great show and, you know, gave me the words and the space to try to be a good parent. And he was also, again, mature and confident beyond his years, because he was also open-minded to listen to any suggestions, because he was 26 and my wife and I had two kids and we were the only actual parents in the cast. And my wife is very smart and reads a lot of books and she's a good parent. And we would read the script every week, and we would talk about the parenting moments, she and I. And together, we would have a couple of little suggestions or ideas for Josh that might, you know, make the parenting a little more, you know, there's some things that I was supposed to do. If I had done them, I would have thought social services would have come in and taken me away. And he was so open, right, and so accepting and so embracing of that. Not all of them all the time, but every week we would do that. So it was really easy to be a father in those circumstances because the words were right and the circumstances were good. And I have Josh to thank. And for the additional tweaks, you know, I have him to thank too for allowing my wife and me to bring our own experience to bear a little. So I can't actually remember a lot of, I do remember the thing about the facts of life. And I just remember doing the scene and think, oh my God, I'm so lucky. Oh my gosh, this is so funny. I love the scene.
Do you remember hitting him upside the head with the newspaper? Smack, smack, smack.
I did. I love that kid. He was a great kid. They're all you, everybody was. I love the whole cast. I still do. Still do.
Hi, Melinda, Rachel, and Peter. We're Ellie and Anna, and we're from England. We're absolutely obsessed with the podcast, and we've watched every episode so far. Our question today is for Peter, and that is, could you tell us any funny stories about Rachel and Melinda from Camp Gallagher days? Thanks.
Oh, boy.
We kind of covered it. Well, but we can always go over it again.
Yeah. It's so funny. I was just there in Connecticut last week.
Really?
I know. I just think about having a reunion. I just think, thank God nobody got in. I just remember Ben and I running full speed in the pitch black from the directly opposite ends of the fields and colliding completely at full speed. And I was so shocked that neither of us broke anything.
Right.
And we popped right back up. So that was a high point. I think we discussed Julie Cooper. as the prison matron.
Yeah.
So
that was scary.
Julie was head of the prison, and you couldn't get free. And Tate and I tried, but at least we found comfort in
each other,
holding each other's hands.
Actually, I think that is what we touched on, the fact that when Ben's kids are old enough and your kids are all old enough, that we can do Capture the Flag in Connecticut with all the new kids.
Oh, that'd be a riot.
Wouldn't it be?
Yeah,
well, how old were Catherine and Jamie at the time?
Well, Jamie was...
She was 10. No, 13.
13, and Catherine was 11. About 10.
10 okay. or 11, yeah.
Well, if we go off that, 3 years, Brian
yeah.
is 7.
Well, you might want to ramp it up so I can actually walk out to the field by the time we do that. That was fun.
So fun.
And Rachel, all I remembered, we all were, which is why Tate and I ended up holding hands for the whole time. I
got paranoid and wanted to get out. I want to leave.
I don't remember much because it was so dark, and we were so scared of you, Mindy.
That's the takeaway.
I've scared CG a few times with that look. I remember getting our bikinis and going in the pool the next day.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I remember that because I remember it was a pool like this around grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet it was not close to the house.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Now we have bears. Lots of bears.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Hello, Melinda, Rachel. I hope you're both doing well. My question is for Peter. So as a young Jewish man myself back then watching the OC as a kid, I love the OC for many reasons. And one of them was because of the whole Jewish Cohen family. So for Peter, my question is, did you have any inspirations behind Sandy Cohen? I mean, obviously he was the father we all wanted to have, but your character really came off as authentic Jewish. And I wonder if you had any inspirations in general from anywhere and any insight on that, if you want to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're doing well.
I had a lot of inspiration. I mean, specifically, Barry Scheck, I sort of modeled in terms of his role as a defense attorney. And, you know, all my friends are Jewish. I was born and raised in New York City. I was born in New York City and raised outside the city and then returned to the city. And I just thought the character was so, it kind of just found its place in me. And, you know, I can hear different bits of my friends and some of Sandy Cohen in terms of his relationship to the law, Barry Scheck. And I spoke, went downtown and hung out with a public defender. But it was, you know, I have to credit Josh. Mm-hmm. Josh Schwartz for really giving the character his voice and his authentic voice, and for casting me, which I'm very grateful that he did. And thanks for your kind words. And I love Sandy Cohen, and it's one of my most favorite roles I've ever played.
I agree with you because it starts with the writing. If the character is so well thought out and it has that voice, if you didn't have that, no matter what research you've done, it's hard to play that, you know, that role. Right. So if the writing is good, and that was Josh's.
And Josh is Jewish, of course. And
yeah,
so, you know,
exactly.
He knows what he.
Yeah.
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 Speaking of Robert Altman, that's how I first met Lyle, was with Robert Altman. We were in Shortcuts together.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were always crazy about his music. And when our first child was being born, we put together a music, the playlist, you know, mm-hmm. and she was in labor for 19 hours. So we listened to that playlist about 400 times. And the premier song in that list was She's No Lady, She's My Wife, which has additional context.
Oh,
if you consider as she's going through labor. She's no lady, she's my wife.
We were going to ask you to sing. So can you give us a few more bars?
If I fall short, if I don't make the grade, if your expectations aren't met in me today, there's always tomorrow or tomorrow night. Hang in the baby, sooner or later, You know I'll get it right. Please don't give up on me. Oh, please don't give up on me. I know it's late.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, am I red?
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm sweating. We love you.
We're like, ah.
Sorry for the musicians out there if the intonation was a little weird.
Oh, no. God, thank you so much.
That was very touching.
Yeah. Oh. It's such a beautiful song.
That's for Solomon.
Thank
and
you.
Dan Penn and Bucky Lindsey, but yeah. Solomon, the king of rock and soul.
Yeah.
Well, Molly, on that note fuck.
Thank you so much, Peter, for being here.
Peter.
It's been way too long. We are going to do that reunion soon.
Oh, we will.
We're coming to your place.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
We're never going to top that, by the way. You singing.
Yes, in our
taking
podcast.
Us out of this episode. That will never be topped.
That's the peak of this podcast.
Don't be silly.
Ugh. Yeah, well.
I'm just glad I didn't screw up the words completely.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. Follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, and you should, especially on this one, check it out on YouTube or on HBO Max.
Bye, guys. See ya, bitches.
Goodbye, bitches. Much love. Sandy Cohen loves you, bitches.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed, heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment, bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible, signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
that's I'm Rabia.
Rabia. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of. Obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No, we're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.